These reefs will allow us to look at the population structure of kelp, the common kelp, which is a really widespread and important species in Australia.
Now, when you say you've installed these reefs, these artificial reefs, how have you done it? What have you actually done?
So it involved a lot of diving and a lot of man hours.
Yeah.
We first dropped these reefs off from a barge, and then a team of divers spent about 2 months underwater just assembling the reefs. So the reefs are metal racks, which are elevated off the sand, and that just avoids them being buried in the sand. And then on top of those metal racks are concrete pavers, and that provides the rock substitute, something for the kelp and all the other organisms to attach to.
So it's just like something you do in your garden.
Exactly, yeah.
Only underwater.
Yep, precisely.
And you were one of the divers?
Yes, I am, yep.
Tell us about the kelp and why you had to do this and why it's important.
So the species of kelp we work on, Aclonia radiata, or the common kelp, or the golden kelp, it's extremely widespread, you know, from northern New South Wales right around down the coast, South Australia, Western Australia, and all around Tassie. It's really the foundation of a lot of our rocky reef ecosystems, and a lot of fisheries and a lot of our coastal ecosystems really rely on this species. I mean, you can't have kelp forests without kelp.
Yeah, what's happening to the kelp at the moment? Is it disappearing?
This species isn't disappearing so much as becoming more degraded and damaged in certain environments for various reasons. Ocean warming is really affecting it. Invasive urchins. Tassie has a large urchin problem, especially on the east coast, and also increased runoff, pollution and coastal development, which we're seeing a lot of in South Australia.
What about the kelp, the work it does? How important is the kelp for the health of the water?
Yeah, so the kelp is really important for the health of the ecosystem. It really is that base. It's the foundation, and it creates really a lot of physical structure and habitat for, you know, a whole raft of other organisms to live in, a lot of which occur nowhere else in the world.
How does it actually work?
So it's purely through the provision of physical space. So it provides, you know, what would have been just bare rock. It creates, similar to a forest on land, it creates a canopy. You have an understory that's a lot, quite a bit shadier. The canopy, the kelp canopy blocks out a lot of light. So it's that shady environment underneath that a lot of other smaller algae live in, a lot of small fish, invertebrates. That's where your abs and your crays tend to live, in that understory. It's through the provisioning of that physical structure that it's really beneficial. You know, it's quite common to see habitat restoration and rehabilitation on land. You know, your local park, you'll see little seedlings going in. It's really just in the early days in the marine environment. We've done an aspect of that. That was kind of a side effect of this study. The reason we built these reefs was to examine the population structure. So what happens as, we're seeing it both in Australia and around the world, as kelp is pressured or stressed, mainly from ocean warming, but from a variety of factors, it becomes less dense and also patchy. So one large kelp forest might actually fragment into several smaller kelp forests. And so we're examining how that patchiness and that decreased density affects the kelp itself. So stuff like how reproductive it is, how it survives, how it grows.
You mentioned sea urchins before. What do they actually do to the kelp?
They just eat it. They're just massive bulldozers. They just go through and eat the entire kelp. They start at the holdfast, so that root-like structure, and they'll just detach it from the rock. Some species will climb up and weigh the top down, and then all of its surrounding, you know, relatives will climb on board and just devour the thing.
So will you be monitoring the reefs, the artificial reefs that you've planted now, making sure the urchins don't go in?
We will.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're positioned actually on sand for a variety of reasons, one of which is to make it separate from the surrounding reef. So what we see on now experimental reefs, we know are purely attributed to those reefs themselves. So there's no other outside kelp influencing them.
So what sort of research will be carried out now that you've actually... How many plantings have you
about
done, by the way?
500.
500?
Yeah, so there's 30 reefs and 500 plants.
Terrific.
So,
and what happens now?
So now we... this is only the very early days. It's a part of a long-term study. About 18 months we'll monitor these reefs. Every 6 weeks we go back and we have a variety of instruments that we've installed that measure light levels, sediment levels, you know, water flow, stuff like that. And then we'll also go back and actually assess the population itself. So we'll count how many juveniles are coming through. We're also assessing the fish and invertebrate larvae that are coming and settling in. We have collectors in there. And we're also assessing just basically all of the life, the entire community on these reefs.
Sounds like a pretty good job you've got.
Oh, it's brilliant. I'm incredibly lucky.
Yeah, during the diving, you get to see the health of underwater.
Yeah, very much so. And it's great. One of the aspects I really love about it is diving so regularly, you really get to see the seasons underwater. And one thing we noticed, last spring seemed to come very early underwater. We had quite a warm spring on land as well, if you remember. but it seemed to happen very early under the water. A lot of the plankton blooms and a lot of the sea squirts that came in, that normally come in late spring, late October, actually came in really early last year.
With this project, did it matter when you actually put the reefs in the water? I mean, it's like, you know, planting on the earth, you've got to sow seeds certain times of the year. Did it matter?
It did to an extent. We wanted to put them in before summer. The kelp are really growing there quickest at summer.
Yep.
So we wanted to put them in just before summer so they had a good chance of growing as fast as possible and reattaching to that to the concrete blocks. That was a real critical point of this study that no one's ever done before, that reattaching adult kelp to transplanting it, basically.
And in the early stages of this project, how are they going? Are they progressing well?
They are. They look a bit ratty, but a lot of kelp looks ratty in summer. It's kind of a funny position that it's growing its strongest, but it actually looks its worst. And then we're hopefully in winter, when it looks its best, it's actually its peak reproductive season. So as winter comes through, hopefully the kelp will look a lot better and it'll start reproducing. And then a lot of our exciting results will start happening.
Okay. And how can people monitor what you're doing?
We provide updates to national parks and also to Pipwe if they're interested. We have a notice to mariners out with the patch location to make sure any recreational or commercial fishermen don't run afoul of the reefs. The reefs are well submerged, but, you know, they might be flathead fishing in the area and snag a line.
Yeah.
We did actually consult with some fishermen before we put them in, and that actually changed where we ended up positioning the final reefs. They were worried that it was in kind of one of their favourite spots, so we moved them offshore a bit more.
And what about feedback from professional divers who might be diving in that area or near that area? Do you want feedback from them as well?
Yeah. If they see them, or if anyone sees equipment washed up on the west coast of Moriah inside the passage, by all means, get in touch with IMAS or the University of Tasmania. We're hoping that a lot of the interactions with divers actually don't occur. They are quite sensitive environments, and we do have quite a lot of instruments out there. But they're quite visible from the water. We've spoken to the ferry operators and the tour operators at Moriah Island, and they've drove over them, and yes, you can see them quite clearly.
Yeah. So how does it feel to be an underwater farmer?
Excellent. Yeah, it's amazing. It's, you know, like I said, one of the best jobs in the world.
Thanks for your time.
No, thanks for having me.